Well, I wonder, have you ever done something well? Have you've taken initiative, you expected to be thanked, but instead felt resented or rebuffed? Have you ever intended good, but it came out sideways, not received as you wished? Or have you ever looked back on earlier efforts and accomplishments and shook your head at yourself, seeing that you were maybe a little naive or misguided at the time? Anybody? What I love about this parable about a father and his two sons is that it reflects and incorporates the genuine way that things go wonky. That's a technical term, by the way. The way resentment and distance and bad feelings make their way in, even when only good was intended. We get the picture of a father who sincerely loves his sons. He loves them and is pained at their estrangement. He stands and watches down the road for the one. He goes out and pleads with the other. He loves them, but something has gone wrong along the way. And it's funny to me in that this parable, clearly the father is meant to represent God, or Jesus as God's Messiah. So it's interesting that even such a figure is not immune to estrangement. He is not immune to being resented or rebelled against. In this way, the parable incorporates a particular experience with prominent figures that have had a certain influence on our lives. But this also includes God and faith and upbringing. For how many people, including many of friends or family members or children maybe, who have grown up in the church or in the faith, but have moved away, walked away from it. A faith that was meant to instill value and love and hope, but it all went wonky. And to find themselves, they had to walk away from it. Perhaps this walking away is not unlike the younger son in our parable. Now he's painted as wild and rebellious and uncontrollable. He goes off and acts irresponsibly until he is needy and desperate, without reasonable recourse. But not everyone who walks away from faith or family or church fits that characterization in the same way. But they walk away because they feel they can be themselves more truly elsewhere, perhaps. They cannot exist under the authority structure. These estranged children consider the boxes they must conform to too stifling, too confining, too contorting, perhaps. And so they go. They go in search. They go in reaction to something. Now, there are some who fit this category, who struggle to fit into the status quo, who struggle to fit into the domineering ideologies or personalities. And their story does play out similarly to the prodigal son. They leave and they go flailingly towards some other future, uncertain what they are looking for, driven largely by pain and loneliness and confusion and hopelessness, and they end up in some bad place. And for those of us who visited Cross Purpose this week, I feel like we heard some of those prodigal-like stories. Folks dealt a lousy hand and who played it even worse and found themselves in a hopeless rubric trying to find their way out. Some came out of foster care, other fatherless homes, some out of incarceration, some on parole, some leaving an abusive relationship or recognizing that they were going nowhere. They were left to fend for themselves, needy. They were, so to speak, eating the pods of the pigs and thinking there has to be a better way. And at that moment, they went searching in desperation and found someone from Cross Purpose who cared for them. And in the language that a number of them used while we were there, they said, "These people loved me until I was able to love myself." Prodigals coming home. Now, what I love about this parable even more than about these prodigals is that this father has two sons. And that just as we might be tempted to look down with an air of compassionate condescension at these people who have lost control of their lives and come back looking for hope and love, who come back as prodigals. We have this older son who stayed home. He remained in the field. Hard work was his pride and integrity. He hoped to be recognized and rewarded. And he, in his own way, instead of rebelling against the father, was trying to earn the favor of the father. And in his own way, instead of closeness and validation, he felt his own alienation and distance, his own loneliness and resentment. He had worked hard, hoping to be noticed. He had tried to honor the father, but never felt that affirmation. He tried to be the honorable child, but resentment and loneliness and estrangement grew in him as well. And that resentment comes surging to the surface at that moment when the rebellious brother gets all the attention. When that irresponsible brother who broke all the rules, who rebelled, who wasted resources and years, messed up his life, stressed out his parents, he comes home and everyone celebrates him. It is that moment that the resentment comes surging and expresses itself like an accountant who has kept track of all expenditures, like a judge who has a list of infractions. When the father hosts a banquet in celebration of the younger son and invites everyone to celebrate this son as an expression of honor to the father and to the community, this older son can't take it any longer. He stays away. He doesn't come in at the invitation. He fumes and scoffs. He says all the things that he has thought over the years, but his goody-two-shoe nature didn't allow him to speak. And when the father comes seeking him, it all comes out. "Listen, for all these years I've been working like a slave for you, and I've never disobeyed your command, yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours comes back, who devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him." Talk about dumping the truck. Estrangement, resentment, loneliness, anger. How is it that despite the love the father has always had, these things still go sideways? Now remember why Jesus tells this story. Luke says that all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." Like the older son, the Pharisees and the scribes, these teachers and preservers of the law and their traditions, they are the dutiful ones. They stayed home. They sought to preserve the traditions, to honor God through their faithfulness and obedience. And in their steadfast faithfulness to God and the tradition, they look down their nose at those who do not fit for one reason or another. Tax collectors, sinners, those who have gone their own way, the unclean who no longer belong. And yet Jesus sits down and eats with these, inviting that stigma of uncleanness upon himself. But the irony is, according to this parable, that Jesus is like the father in the story. Like the God that the Pharisees and the scribes think that they are protecting and preserving. For God, like the father in the parable, goes to the lost and hugs them, celebrates them, throws a party for them, welcomes them back into the family, and they begin to reform a community in the wake of this estrangement. And like the older son in the story, the Pharisees and scribes have a hard time accepting this portrayal of the father. They have a hard time for at least two reasons. One, they don't like that Jesus, like the father in the story, might go after these lost ones. They would prefer more of a law kind of approach to make clear sins and infractions, to deter others from going down such a road. They like to be more of an accountant when it comes to these things. But secondly, they don't like it because they realize they do not actually know the father in this story very well. So they're the preservers of the metaphorical father, but they don't know the Father. They don't anticipate the Father's response. They feel alienated by his choices. They themselves require reconciliation and return. And they don't really want to hear that. They are now the ones who dishonor the Father by not coming to the banquet, by not coming into the house and being part of a new community. But the Father stands there with open arms. The Father comes to us who, like Pharisees out in the field, tend to hold our distance perhaps. Now the Pharisees and scribes may object to Jesus' parable, saying that this is not how they understand God. It is a different portrayal. And they are probably right. You see, understanding and conceptions of God, faith, the world, our understandings of these things are all contextually contingent, meaning as culture changes and our life experiences change, our perceptions change. In fact, I had a theology professor who at one time defined theology as the study of God at a particular time, place, and culture. It's always changing. Our perceptions are always changing. Our understandings ought always to adapt. Because, as the story suggests, perhaps God too adapts. The Father in this story adapts. Rather than sitting home like nothing has happened, rather than laying all the blame on the son who left and demanding that the son make restitution before he returns, or cutting the son off altogether, this father is guided by his heart. He stands every day looking down the road, waiting. And when he sees the son, he runs and embraces him. Now, in the Middle Eastern culture, a head of a household would never run. It would be an embarrassing thing. But this father sees his son and he runs. And when the father welcomes his son home, and he opens the house, and he invites the community in for a celebration, things are changing. The community has not likely gathered to celebrate such things before. The community is being called on to adapt and to celebrate and to do the work of forming new relationships, new understandings, new ways of responding to one another. You see, reconciliation is very limited if one party thinks themselves right and unmovable and expects the other to make all the accommodation and apology. See, that's not really reconciliation. That's just returning to the power dynamics that likely caused or contributed to the break in the first place. To find a way forward together, both parties have to be able to acknowledge, express, adapt. So the father acts in untraditional ways. He runs to meet the child. He embraces this unclean son. He celebrates by gathering the community together to have a banquet in his honor. The unresolved question for the Pharisee and the scribe, for the older son, for the self-righteous in all of us, is this: will they choose love and reconciliation, even though it will change them in the process? Will they come in and be part of this new emerging community? And in doing so, can the good, hardworking son admit his own estrangement, his own hurt, his own need to and desire to know and experience the Father himself? Now, there's one last thing I love about this parable. It's this. It conveys the whole story through metaphor and storytelling that is the Passion of the Christ, which we will celebrate during Holy Week. But we get to do so without crosses and night tribunals and thorns and blood. But the Passion comes through still. The remaking of an estranged family and community. And all are invited to come. This includes the ones who've never felt they belonged, the ones who rebelled and went away, But it also includes the ones who thought they were right and justified, the ones who saw themselves as the gatekeepers and the righteous ones. All are invited, meaning all have to choose whether they want to be a part of this or not. No one is perfect. No one is exempt. Each must choose to come and be willing to be part of a new forgiving community, a new community shaped by an extravagant father. See, the word prodigal means extravagant. And the one who's most extravagant in the story is actually the father. And the lingering question at the end of this parable is this: will you embrace such a God? Will you come be a part of such a community shaped by grace and love? Or will you stay in the field, self-justified, adamant, and at a distance? And all God's people said. I invite you to stand as you're able. Let's sing our hymn together.